The Unpublished Podcast with Amy and James.
Hello, artists and creatives. Welcome to another episode of the Unpublished Podcast.
I'm James.
And I'm Amy. And today we have a really special guest. We have Emma Couette on the pod. Emma is an author, a self-pubbed author, who is... The reason why I have Emma on today is because I've witnessed Emma over the last 3-4 years fight for her books, show up for her books, like just take up space as an author in the most profound and amazing way. And I really, really want to have a discussion with you today, Emma, about what life is like as a self-pubbed author and what it's like to champion your books in the way that you do. We are so grateful to have you on.
Thank you so much. I am honored to be here.
I'm so excited to dive in.
And to start off with, I just have to say, you have a book out like literally 2-3 days ago, right? And congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, it was, today's what, Friday? It was Wednesday. I'm still like kind of in the surreal after effects of I'm not really sure that just happened.
And I was also, correct me if I'm wrong, but have you got 6 books out since 2020?
I was 2019.
2019.
October still... was when I published my debut. And yeah, this is my 6th. One is a short story, but like collection, but I still count it as a book. So.
Absolutely. I mean, incredible. Yeah. Like so inspiring.
It is.
To me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at your Goodreads today and just looking at like, you've had an incredible, 5 years of just pumping out these books. Amazing. Like, do we want to talk about the book that's just come out? Or do we want to go straight into the self-pub discussion, James?
Carrying on with that conversation that we were just having, I wanted to ask Emma, 6 books in 5 years, like what is, as a indie author, as someone who doesn't have a publisher, you know, at their back hounding them for a book, how do you keep up that pace of writing?
Well, I got very tired at one point. I'll touch on that maybe later about burnout and whatnot. But when I published my debut, it was actually the 3rd book that I'd written. By the time I published it, I'd written like, I think it was at 7 full first drafts of books before I ever like actually published one. I've been writing since I was 13 and I published at 20. So in 7 years, I had this backlog of books that I'd already written before I started publishing. So since publishing my debut, I've just been revising, rewriting, editing, like going through the process with these already written books. And now I'm at the point where I'm like, there's nothing written. I gotta like start writing again and like getting back into that headspace of first drafts and new ideas. So
a
lot of it
was
just, I feel like I'm excited to like write like from scratch again. It's like, obviously it's a lot of work. Like it's not necessarily the hardest part, but getting back into that like headspace of new drafts, you know, shitty art. It's hard after so many years of like perfecting things and just finding the time now at this point in my life, because I have a full-time job and, you know, have to be an adult now. When I was first doing all these drafts, I was in high school still. So I had all this, like all my free time went to like just writing. I was always writing. And now I don't have as much of the time to set aside to do the writing, so getting into a better like routine is kind of what I'm trying to do now.
Do you have an idea? Is it going to be another sequel or is it going to be an original, new, fresh?
So first up on my plate is the 3rd book in the series. So I just published the 2nd book in my fantasy series this week. So now people in reviews are like, I can't wait for the 3rd book. And I'm like, oh my God, it's not done. So yeah, I'm like kind of like freaking out about that, like happy that they want it, obviously. And then just like trying to not get like too stressed out about needing to get book 3 done, because if I get too stressed about it, I can't write at all. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be even longer. So I'm like, don't stress, don't think about it. So that one's first. I'm basically rewriting the whole thing. So it's almost like a first draft. It's like first draft 2.0. But after that, I'm not entirely sure. I have lots of like plethora of ideas, some stuff that I've started writing years ago, but didn't carry on with yet. Some stuff that's just literally like bits of dialogue in a binder somewhere. So I have different options and I'm not sure which one I'm going with yet. Yeah.
It's exciting. It's super exciting. Like, I can't wait for this next era of, like, because you will have leveled up as an author over this time as well, like, so much. Like, it's exciting to actually get to write something new. Yeah, it's going to be a good era.
As an aside, that's also how Jane Austen did it. She had a bunch of, like, she had, I think, 5 or 6 novels pretty much written before she published her debut. And then it was like, people go, how did Jane Austen release 4 books in 4 years? And it was like, well, she didn't write them all in 4 years. It was, she'd been writing them over many years. So I think it's a really interesting and cool way to do it. And I'm kind of jealous. And I kind of feel like I associate
that's kind of what you're doing,
I guess it is a little bit, because I have a few in the backlog that are only half finished and that I'm now revising. But it can be for me, because of that idea that I feel like I've leveled up by the time I get to a newer one. And then I go back to a one that I'm revising from 3 years ago. And I'm like, I'm so much better now. But then that's an exciting thing as well.
You get to improve it. Yeah. Yeah, that's so cool. Incredible. Like, I really love this idea of understanding that authors, like, I really want this episode to basically just be a guiding light for authors who are considering self-pub stuff. And the idea that you can build up this wealth of stories and books and play and have fun, and then you can do it and just have this incredible backlog. Like, James, I think it's an incredible idea for you to go down this route that Emma's doing, because then that prolificness is so cool. And being an author who consistently publishes is such a big thing, I think, especially in the self-pub world, like consistently putting yourself out there and building relationship with an audience.
Yeah, amazing. So I want to go back to 2019, to your first self-published book, and I want you to talk us through, you know, maybe the fears, the anxieties, the things that you had to overcome. What was the experience like getting that first one out there?
Yeah, it was an adventure. I actually tried to publish one of my books a few years before that, back when KDP was still CreateSpace, and I ended up, like, I think I was 16 or 17 at the time. I had no idea what I was doing. I hadn't done any research. I just knew that you could, like, you know, publish on CreateSpace, but I couldn't figure it out, like, how to do it. It was too complicated. And I think that was just God's way of, like, saving me from publishing then, because if I had published that book then, it was Summer's Revenge, which became the first book in my fantasy series. And if I had published it then, I don't think I would be where I am now, because it was not a book to be published yet. So that's where it started. And then, like, I was so sad that I couldn't figure it out. I was, like, crushed for, like, a couple years. And then I did a lot more research. I started watching, like, YouTube of other self-published authors and, like, reading stuff and whatnot. And then I decided in 2018, I believe, that I was going to publish my debut novel, Silent Night, which is a different series than the first book I published, but I felt like it was better suited to being published. And I wrote the first draft of that book in, like, 2 straight months.
Wow.
87,000 words.
Whoa.
I have not done that since. I started writing it for NaNoWriMo 2016, I think. And I wrote 30,000 words in November, and then the additional 57,000 in December.
Holy crap, Emma.
Like, I don't know. Like, looking back, I'm like, how did that even happen? But it did. And then in 2018, I was like, hey, I'm going to revise this. And I had since drafted the first draft of books 2 and 3 in that series as well. So they were, like, ready. Like, they needed to be rewritten, obviously, but. So I started in 2018 and just went through my whole process of, like, draft 2, heavy rewrites, draft 3, more rewrites, send a critique partner, do draft 4 on critique partner notes, send to beta readers, do draft 5 on beta readers.
Wow.
Then I do my own fine edits, and then I send to an editor. But, like, that whole process took about a year.
Yeah.
So, and I was figuring it out as I went. Yeah, just every time I do it, I discover more things. Like,
I was about to ask that.
Things that are easier. And then, like, I've found that it's actually better somehow to give beta readers less time as opposed to more time.
Yes.
So originally, I think I gave them 3 months.
Yeah, way too long.
Yeah. And it made sound like, well, how fast can, like, you read and critique? Like, I was trying to, you know, like, give them space because I didn't want to, like, rush anybody. But the longer you give them, the more spread out it gets, the less they feel connected to each bit of the story. And I also, the first time, I gave it to them in sections. So they get 3 chapters, and then they have to, like, answer questions. And then I would put the next three chapters into their document. And it was like so much more work than it needed to be.
Interesting. Having beta, I always say it wrong, is a really interesting part of this process. It's interesting to hear how other people do it because it is hard and it's also a lot to ask someone to do.
Yeah. So now I just give them the whole document in one go, because then I don't have to like monitor it either, because I was constantly having to check to see, oh, did they answer the questions yet? Are they done? Like, it was just exhausting. And I didn't realize until afterwards that it didn't make any sense. So now I give them the whole document and I like embed the questionnaires into the document. So every three chapters, there's the link to go to the Google form and answer the questions. So then you come back and you can keep reading.
That's a really good system.
Yeah, I just figured that out this book, which is my sixth. So
we learn more and more each time. Were you going to say something, James?
I was going to say, how do you find your beta readers?
So mostly I just post on Instagram. So like, I always talked about my books on my page, like long before they're actually like publishable and stuff. So it's kind of like constant marketing in some form or another helps people gain interest on your book. And then when I put out a post, it's like, hey, I'm looking for beta readers. People sign up. And it's not a lot of people. I'm constantly trying to figure out how to get more people to do this sort of thing. I don't know, maybe like forums or something where people are kind of more looking for that. But usually it's just reader or writer friends that are interested in the book, and or people wanting to know more about the beta reader process for themselves, so they sign up to someone else's. Yeah.
Do you find it useful? Do you find all that feedback useful? Like for my personal experience, I find it quite overwhelming.
Yeah.
How do you deal with it when you get all that feedback?
Yeah. So usually like I read through it as I get it, so that it's not like everybody finishes reading and I have to like read all their feedback at once, because then I probably would never write again.
Yeah.
So I kind of am reading it as it comes through, and I usually let them comment on the doc too on Google. So like I get their kind of like live reactions too. So I'm kind of like absorbing the information as it goes through. So when I sit down to like actually like look at it in detail, I kind of already know the gist of what people have said about it. So it's not like I open it and all these like negative things all of a sudden and it just like kills the mood. But it is overwhelming too. I think my first book had 10 beta readers. It was a lot. But I'm like a color coder and stuff, so everybody had their own color, and like I highlight different things, like confusion is green and more detail is blue, and like this different, I categorize different things that they're finding, and then I kind of go through it by color each. So yeah. I make a list of, in like, I'm a notebook person, so I write down all of their like things that I need to fix in a notebook, even though it's already on the screen, but I write it down on the notebook. And then as I work on them, I like cross them out. And then if I get like 10 things crossed out, I like rewrite them again so that it looks like less. So I'm not flipping through like 16 pages of things. And I just kind of work through it what seems easiest to what seems hardest, which might seem counterproductive, but I can't go through it like in like chronological order, because it's just like I don't want to do that one, so I just skip to one I want to do.
Yeah, great.
And then eventually come back to the ones that are harder to like accept the changes, even if I know that it's something that needs to be done. So
how do you work out if something is something you should follow, like, you know, if how do you work out whether you agree with what the beta readers are saying or not, or whether you want to integrate it?
Yeah, it's hard. Usually you like, I look for patterns. So if like six people said that this character is bland, then they're probably right. And it can take some time to like accept that they're right, because obviously like this is your baby and you spent so much time writing on it, and you're like, well, no, they can't be bland, but like, you've got to like step away from it. Usually if I like read a comment or like question or suggestion that I don't like, I'll like step away from it for a bit and like come back to it later once I've like kind of ripped the book apart enough that it doesn't hurt as much anymore.
Yeah, I understand.
And some things, like there's some things where they'll say, you know, to do this, and like I see where they're coming from, And but I'm just like, no, no.
Yeah, great.
I'm not doing that.
I think it's so important,
right? But yeah, it's like sometimes it's like, well, maybe this could be that, but I'm choosing not to do that because I prefer the way that I'm doing it more, even if it's not technically the best way to do it. And then other times it's also about like knowing your story too, because sometimes they'll make suggestions or complain about something that's confusing, but it's supposed to be. And so you've got to like know that, like, okay, they don't understand why this is happening, but it's going to be explained in a later book. So they're not supposed to understand. They're supposed to be confused.
Yeah, so I get that all the time. With James, I'll be reading through his book and I'll be like, what the fuck is happening here? And I'll make a note. And then I'll literally read like two sentences beyond and I'll be like, oh. Like, yeah, I was confused for a second.
Yeah, sometimes it's like, just wait until like the next section. And other times it's like, well, you won't find out until book two or three. And I apologize for that, but that's just the way that it is.
Yeah, I think I've had some beta readers before who aren't big fantasy readers, and then they will often be more confused by those sort of things. Because if you're a fantasy reader, like if you're used to reading, you know, seven book series, then you just expect to be confused half the time and you kind of love it. And it's sort of, I think, getting people to get used to that feeling can be hard, but you have to trust that your reader who is picking up the genre will probably hopefully be someone who understands it. Even if your beta reader doesn't understand it, like your actual paid customer will be someone who is looking for that feeling as well, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
Okay, I just want to say quickly, like, it's also about if you do see things where they're like really confused, even if they're supposed to be, I try to like put in some kind of like foreshadowing or like underlying explanation that doesn't quite, but like helps them along a bit.
Yeah, it's nice. It's like, don't worry, it's coming.
Yeah.
I had a question about how you found your editor. So after this beta reader process, you have an editor, and how did you find this editor? Do you have the editor, same editor for all your books, and what's that process like?
Yeah, so I actually went online. I think there's this website for Canada that's like Editors of Canada, and it's just literally a list of all the accredited editors in Canada that have signed up to be on this like website. So I knew going into it that all of these editors were legit.
Yeah.
Because that's like a big thing, is like I've heard a lot of people that have gotten scammed by editors that A, don't know what they're doing, or like charge way too much, or like they're just, they say, like, anybody can say that they're an editor, but these people on this website actually took courses in editing and like they have their certificate and whatnot. So I just went through the list, and like all of them like have links to their websites. So I spent a while going through, clicking on website links, reading their profile, seeing what they charge, seeing what kind of books that they had edited in the past, and just getting a vibe for people. I was going mostly off of vibes.
Yeah. That's how we live.
Yeah, it was important to me to get a Canadian editor, though, because I wanted to support like my own country, but also because Canadian English is not the same as American English or British English, which drives me nuts when I'm like working. I think it's on Google. Google does not have an option for Canadian English. So half of my words are under, like, there's words that are underlined no matter if I pick American or British, because like we're just like a conglomeration of both, which drives me nuts. But so I wanted a Canadian editor who understood that, like, you know, this word should have this versus, like, you know, yeah, because Canadian is just a little bit different.
She's special. She's
it's funny because we get an Australian keyboard, but it's funny they don't do a Canadian keyboard when you have a much bigger population than us. Although maybe your English-speaking population is similar to our English-speaking population.
Yeah,
well, I think Google just thinks that we speak British English, I think.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know.
They're just missing.
But there's like, there's just some words that we pick to spell American way.
Yeah. It's very strange. Like some things I think we do the Z for rationalization. You know, British do an S, and I think America does a Z. And, you know, I think Australia picks and chooses as well there. And you're like, why? But
annoying.
Yeah. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but like, well, one is like the spelling of the color gray. Yes. I actually use both depending on what I'm talking about.
What does the English use? E.
Yeah. Or jail.
Like if I'm talking about the color gray, I'll use like A. But if I'm talking about like Earl Grey tea, I'll use the E. And I, like in my head, like E in gray is fancier. an A.
Yeah, it's way fancier. Seems,
but in like really my harsh. In my writing, my editor, like, she's like, you gotta pick one. I'm like, oh, fine.
And so yeah, once you picked your editor, have you had this editor for most of your books, or how did that
keep yeah out? So she lives in Ottawa, which is the capital of Canada, so she actually does live in my province too, because I live in Ontario. And she edited my first book. She did a sample edit first, and I liked what she did there. So then I hired her to do my debut novel. And then, like, once she done my debut novel, like, my other books after that were in the same series. So it didn't make sense to get another editor because they'd have to read book one in order to really properly edit the rest of the books. And I liked the work that she had done anyway, so I was like, okay, I'll just keep going. And then yeah, she's edited all my books.
Amazing.
Since then. And she's Richards Corrections is her business name, if anybody wants to.
Honestly, as long as you don't take over my time,
because I'll need her, but
does she do a structural copy, like line edit? What type of edit does she do?
I don't know if she does different, more types of editing, but I get her. She does a combination of like line edits and copy edits.
Yeah.
So like choices for style, clarification, and then also punctuation, grammar, spelling. And even sometimes she'll also will like add in like suggestions to make the plot a little bit better. Mm. But usually when I give it to the editor, like, I've already had a critique partner and a beta reader, so I kind of skip the need for developmental edits, because also there are like development edits are like four times more expensive than the other edits, so like I can't afford to do both.
Yeah, interesting.
At this stage,
I balance. It's a clever way to do it. And you're right, like a structural edit or developmental edit is, I choose to, instead of doing beta readers, to go straight to the editor for that. And that's always the biggest investment. I guess it's the most work.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so her edits, like it's a cent per word. And of course I write like 100K books. So yeah, it's $1,000 to edit my books. And that's pretty standard where I am. So I think a lot of people now are actually charging 2 cents per word.
Interesting. So
the more you write, the more it costs. I can't be short-winded to save my life. So I also write fantasy. So it's
yeah, you can't do it short.
I mean, that's part of that's business, right? It's that you got to decide where you spend your money and where you don't spend your money. I think that's a really interesting strategic decision that we have to make as well every day. Like we're deciding at the moment whether for ages and ages we felt like we had to put off getting Amy an assistant for 1 or 2 days of a week, and we just realized that like the amount of money we were saving that we end up thinking we could get back. But, you know, it's going to be an interesting experience for us. It's always hard, I think, for writers to pay someone else to do something for them, because we feel like we have this self-sufficiency narrative or something.
I could do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I do that all day long. It's like, I do a million things. I wear all the hats.
And I think that's something that's so impressive about watching you is the way that you do wear a lot of hats. I mean, obviously you're also getting support and help that you need, but self-publishing books is a huge job and you're doing a lot of stuff, Emma, and it's very impressive to watch.
We're having a conversation, you know, about an hour ago about how when we look at what you do, when we look at your website, when we look at your socials, we just feel amazed. Like we feel inspired. We honestly feel completely inspired. Like I just wish that I had that. Whatever that energy is, I want it, you know?
It's not caffeine, I tell you that. It's not
caffeine.
There
you go.
Can't believe it. The way that you, and like I really recommend anyone listening, like go and look at the way that Emma does her Instagram, the website, like and just even like how you promote and speak about your book, because it's incredible. And you know, I feel like so many of us, we choose and we dare to pick ourselves. Like if we're writers, we dare to self-publish, but then it's so easy to be like, okay, I self-published, but then to let ourselves down afterwards and to not fight for the books and to just basically immediately give up. But watching you, Emma, over the last 6 books, you know, could take yourself so fucking seriously when no one chose you or told you you could, has been so fucking incredible and inspiring to watch. Like you literally, I hate to say it, inspire me to write.
Yeah, well, it's yeah.
Sorry, Emma, you go.
No, it's I lost it. Go ahead.
I'm so sorry. I was gonna say
it's okay.
If Amy brought Emma's energy to her writing, like to her marketing her writing, I feel like you'd be so much more successful.
I know, and I really have a lot to learn from you.
Not that you are, not that we aren't really happy with how your books do, but it's just like I feel like you, that would be what would take it to the next level.
Yeah, I agree. And so I really do. I have so much to learn from you, Emma, and I have a few like questions I would love to ask about, like just the ways that you do it. And one of the things is I saw you have special editions.
Yeah, so I don't have any with me to show you, actually. But, well, technically the hardcovers of the Silent Night trilogy, well, the Guild trilogy, if I'm going to use the actual title, Silent Night, Sacred Ruse, and Solemn Vow, I originally released them in just paperback and ebook. And I've always wanted hardcovers of my books because I'm a hardcover person, but it just wasn't feasible at the time of originally publishing them. And I didn't really know how to go about it. So in the years after, I learned more about that. I learned about the existence of Ingram Spark, which is where I publish my hardcovers through, because at the time, Amazon didn't offer hardcovers.
Interesting.
So when I first published, Ingram Spark existed, but I didn't know about that. So I thought I couldn't do hardcovers. And I always wanted hardcovers. So when I decided to publish the hardcovers, I was like, okay, well, they got to be like special. Otherwise, people aren't going, like, they already have the paperback or the ebook and, you know, published a couple years ago now. And like it, so I had to create like new hype basically. So I got new covers done, and I love everything about the hardcover covers. They're just stunning. I got the new hardcover covers done, which I haven't quite decided yet, but I think this year I'm going to be moving the paperbacks also to the same covers.
Oh, cool.
Because I like them better, and also my original covers for books 1 and 2, the cover designer is no longer in business. So if I ever needed like changes of some kind, like I can't really get them changed, so I'm like, it's probably easier just to move them to the new covers just for things maybe later on down the road. And then also for the hard covers I did bonus content. So I wrote short stories to go with them, so each hardcover has 2 short stories at the end of it.
That's so cool. So clever.
And basically it was partly like me like wanting to write more in this world that I created, because I wrote Silent Night originally in 2016, I think. Might have been 2015. And I published Solemn Vow 2022, I think. It's all a blur. I mean, you know, COVID.
Oh my God, like, I could never tell you.
I published like 3 books, 3-4 books during like COVID. I don't know.
Incredible.
It is incredible. Like, you just pumped it out there. I also love that this. Sorry, no, you keep going.
No, it's okay,
I'm about to derail the conversation because I have a random.
Okay. So I spent all these like over 5 years in this like series, and so I wasn't quite ready to like let go yet. So like writing these short stories kind of like gave me the excuse to like pop back into the world.
I love
that. I wrote each short story from 2 perspectives, so we got 2 characters in each one, and most of them were like, the book is told from 1 perspective, so I got to like go in the heads of the other characters in the story. And some of the stories took place before the actual events of the series. Some took place during, in the eyes of characters that for events that the main character wasn't actually there to see and just heard about later. So now I actually got to like the readers actually get to see what was happening from the other characters' perspectives. And then I also did 2 that were set after.
Cool.
So you kind of get closure on some things that I didn't really get a chance to like go over in the actual book 3. So there's one that's like set like, you know, 6 years after. And so, yeah, those were the bonus content for the hardcovers. Then I also did a couple other fun things, like there was a deleted epilogue that I put in book 1. So I added that into the hardcover, like, hey, this was almost in book 1.
I love that.
And I also did, there's a few scenes that I rewrote from the love interest point of view when I was revising book 1. Because my critique partner was kind of talking about, he's like the scene, it needed something. And she's like, try writing it from the other character's perspective to see like what they would, to get into their head to understand what they would actually do in the scene, because she felt like the other character wasn't, like the main character wasn't describing this other character's movements in a way that like was realistic and like dialogue and stuff. So I rewrote the scene from their perspective in order to revise the actual perspective of the story.
But then you get so bonus content.
Yeah, so I made a bonus content. I'm like, here, read it from the other person's perspective. So
I love that. I think it's so clever. And this is all the shit, like, you know, when you have to delete a chapter or again, yeah, you like wrote, like at the moment when me and James are writing out space story together and we've got an epilogue that I think we've managed to save, but at some point I was like, I don't think we're going to be able to share this, but just whack it in bonus content later. It's so cool that we don't have to like really like delete all these things.
Yeah, so many of the rules of the old traditional publishing marketplace are dissolving, or that, I mean, that's something so cool about indie is that you can do these things that a publisher probably would have been like,
it's not worth it.
I don't know, it's not worth it, not worth our time to put them in there, but you're like, well, I can do it.
Just, I'm gonna do it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I love that.
And then in book two's hardcover, I threw in character art.
Oh, cool.
And something else. I can't remember what the other something else was off the top of my head. And then in book three, I put in a playlist of the songs that I'd listened to while drafting. And book three was actually the only one that I actually listened to music that had words while drafting. So it's mostly just 21 Pilots Blurry Face album.
Amazing.
And then some heavy metal, like, that doesn't make any sense, but like, I'm like, here, you want to know, this is what
I mean, that's
to.
So great. And like, these are the kind of things that when I'm like, when creatives and all artists, but obviously specifically writers, are like, I don't know, you know, I don't know how to stand out from the crowd, I don't know how to make myself, you know, be different, I'm like, there are so many cool things you can do, and Emma, you're just leading the way there. That's an incredibly cool addition to have. Love yeah. it.
And then I also added a map.
Ah.
Because the other original books didn't have a map.
Cool.
But I drew my own map when I was writing it, so I'm like, hey, let's make this. And like, I didn't include a map in the original books because like I couldn't afford to have one made. So like, I was a later point in my career making the hardcover, so I could afford to like put some more stuff into them. And I did fancy chapter headers, which the way I went about it probably is not the easiest way to do it, but like, I formatted like these, like the chapter headers in Canva as like square photos, and then inserted them into each chapter in the Word document.
Oh my god. Do you format everything? Do you do all your formatting
yes.
yourself?
Wow.
You know, yeah, I'm just in awe. I'm in awe. Like, the thought of doing all of the formatting would fucking do my head in. That's incredibly cool.
Yeah, I hope for my next book to, well, I'm going to format book three of my fantasy series myself because I want to make sure that it matches what I've done for book one and two. And I don't think I could explain to someone else what it is that I've done. But hopefully after that, when I start a new series, I'm planning on hiring somebody to do it or getting like better software, because it's just, I can do it, but it's not something I want to do anymore.
Great.
I am time poor. So I'm like,
yeah.
Somebody else, please do this, because it's great up until you get to the point where it's like, oh, this thing is not working. And like, I know that this is something that doesn't work and I can't remember how to make it work.
I wanted to ask you, because you are time poor, because you have a job, how do you fit all this in around the job?
It's the time, I don't really know. Like, I look at it. I remember a couple episodes ago on the podcast, you guys were talking about like all the things you've done. You're like, how did we do that?
Yeah.
And so most of the time, yeah, I'm looking back, I'm like, I don't know when I did most of this.
It's obviously, yeah, it's happening.
Yeah, it's been hard. I've been noticing more and more, like the less time that I have, and more I've been having to try to make like an actual routine to make sure that things get done. And yeah, it's just the past like 4 years have been a lot of like new experiences. I'm living with my boyfriend now for about a year now, and it's been really hard figuring out like spend time with him, do writing stuff, you know, like watch our TV shows. And because I work 8 to 5. And so I get home about 5:30, and then I have from 5:30 until maybe 10:30 to, you know, do all the other life stuff.
Yeah.
And I also go to the gym two to three times a week. And so that's like an hour at least. And then, you know, you got to shower, you got to eat. Yeah. So there's
it's
like
a lot. The extra
time. Yeah. So it's basically, I have my list of priorities. I thrive off of making lists. So my notebooks have like a running list of things to do. And I just read through them and pick like, you know, two or three things a day that absolutely need to get done or be worked on and do those.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
just kind of keep rotating through things and making sure things get done as they need to get done. And the thing that has been slipping through the cracks this year so far has been the actual writing.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh my God, I can't, because now people want book three. And I'm like, okay, I've been writing it mostly, but also not really.
Yeah.
And so last week I challenged myself to like the bare minimum of bare minimums. And I'm like, you have to write 100 words a day.
Great.
And like, that's all. But like 100 words isn't really actually that much. Like it's about a paragraph and a half. So I knew I could handle like 100 words. And then I knew that I probably wasn't going to do just 100 words. Mm-hmm. So I ended up the end of the week with like 860 words or something.
Amazing.
Which, if I hadn't said to myself, you only need to write 100 words a day, I probably wouldn't have written at all. So
that's
it's like
the magic.
Just slowly getting back into that routine of just like, I haven't written this week because all the nonsense with like
the book
release
launch
and last
yeah.
minute stuff is like, no, I don't have the mind space for this. But
launch week is for launching and nothing else, I swear. Like that's a big thing for you. I totally
like just keeping
that.
Up with notifications.
Mm.
It's like, why is everybody like, obviously it's great that everybody's like talking about the book, but it's like, why is all this happening?
You know, I think we talk about consistency a lot, but obviously I think I want to say it's totally fine to take even a few months off from your creative projects if you have other stuff on, especially if it's other stuff that's supporting your creative projects. I think that's so important.
Yeah.
Like I think of everything you've been doing for the launch, in my view, is writing.
Yeah, it's funny. I see it. I mean, it's for your, it's for you as an author.
Yeah, I've just, yeah. So yeah, taking breaks for anybody listening, obviously, like that's very important to not like be constantly. I suffered from a huge bout of burnout after the release of my fourth book. Yeah. So Solemn Vow was the conclusion to the Guild trilogy, and I finished like launching all of that. And I'd been basically just like go, go, go ever since the release of Silent Night. So it was 2019 of October, and I published Solemn Vow in 2022 February. So whatever time that is, I've just been like constantly go, go, go. All I would do most nights and most weekends was just like write all day or do writing related things. It got to the point where like I used to go to my boyfriend's on the weekends and leave my laptop at home so that I wouldn't work. Because I'm very much like workaholic, perfectionist, like constantly on type of person. And I published Solemn Vow, and I was supposed to go straight into rewrites for the book I published last week, this week rather. So I was supposed to start rewriting it in 2022, and it was supposed to be published in 2023. That was the timeline. Because I had published book one in July of 2021. So I'm like, okay, we got to get the cycle going for book two now. And I was supposed to start the rewrites of that. And I published Solemn Vow, dabbled a few times in Winter's Wrath the following month. And then I literally wrote nothing for 6 months.
Wow.
I couldn't write a single thing.
So interesting. And what was happening to you?
The burnout just like hit me like a truck. Like I had been staving it. Like I knew it had been coming for like months before this, and I just didn't listen. Cause I'm like, no, just go, go, go. You got to get this done. You got to like write the books and publish the books and market the books. And, you know, just if you stop, like I thought it was like all going to like come crumbling down around me. But like I published the book and I hit the wall. My brain was like, no, you must stop now.
Yeah. Amazing.
if you don't rest and, you know, give yourself that space beforehand, like your body is going to force you to at some point. Like you can't avoid the break, but you can choose when you want to have it as opposed to being forced to have it.
Yeah.
So I didn't write pretty much at all for like 6 straight months.
How did it feel?
And I opened the document. I tried, like, I stared at the blank page
so hard,
so many times for so many days, and just like hated myself for like the first half of it, because I'm like, I can't, how, what, I'm a writer and I can't write. It was awful. And I like reread other projects and thought, well, maybe it's just the project, I should be doing something else. And then I tried to like work on that, and that didn't happen either. And the thing that kind of got me out of it was I started writing more short stories for the series, because I had the 6 short stories that were in the hardcover special editions. And then I thought to myself, well, if you didn't buy the hardcovers, you can't read the short stories. And so then the idea for my short story collection kind of came along, and I decided that I was going to publish these short stories as their own thing. But I wanted to write a couple more so that the short story collection would also be different from just having the hardcovers. So I started writing the extra 2 short stories that I wanted to include in this collection. So those were the only things I wrote in that 6-month period, was those, but they were kind of easy because it was already an established world and it didn't need to be rewritten. Like, basically I wrote these short stories, sent them to my critique partner just to like make sure that I wasn't, you know, introducing stuff that the books had already like talked about or whatever, and then I had them edited and that was it. Like, I didn't do extensive rewrites, so they were very like low volume. But I didn't actually like start working on Winter's Wrath again until I think it was July. I had like a mini breakthrough where I wrote a little bit, and then I didn't start writing regularly again until late October.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was rough. That's so, I mean, so hard. And I feel like, but sadly, like so many writers, I feel like you have to navigate it to know it. Like, you can't listen to someone else tell you about it. Like, for some reason, writers will have to hit their wall. But in terms of going forwards, how are you going to make sure this doesn't happen again?
Yeah, so I've been giving myself like a lot of grace, and I'm at the point now where I think I've overcorrected because like for the longest time, like once I started writing again, okay, like you just can't go. You got to like give yourself, so I started giving myself more grace, more breaks, more days where I didn't have to write. But now I think I've given myself too much grace, and I'm like avoiding the writing now. Like I'm doing everything else except write. So now I have to like correct back and try to find the actual balance of writing and life.
This morning I was looking at my to-do list. It was like, you know, all author stuff. It was like so many emails, like website stuff, like all the stuff to do with my career as an author. And it was so much easier. I was like, I just want to do that. Like, I'm really stuck at a point in my edits for my detective novel at the moment. And I was like, all I want to do is these like periphery jobs that are author jobs, but they're not writing. And I sat myself down and I forced myself to write, and I was pissed about it. But it's so easy to put all that other stuff first, because it is really important and it's about being an author. But I think if the writing gets let go, as you know, like if you stop writing, there are no more books.
So yeah, that's why last week I sat myself down like, you must write 100 words a day to prove that you can still do it.
Proud of you. Do you have any questions that have popped up, Jamesy?
Really good question. I feel like I've had so many questions that have come up in my mind, and I've forgotten to ask them. I'm just continually amazed. I think I was going to ask something about generally how you're feeling about the indie space at the moment. Like, do you feel like it's a really exciting time to be an indie author? What are you seeing going around? Like, what's the hot gossip?
The hot gossip. Well, I try to stay out of like the hot gossip and like the, you know, hot takes and all that.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time on Threads right now. I'm liking Threads. I hated Twitter, but I like Threads. I'm not really sure what the difference is in my head, but like there's just so much, like there's a lot of negative energy right now, I feel. There's like a lot of fear about AI books and like the morality of this and that. And then there's like this big thing right now about authors and reviewer spaces and reviewers tagging authors and negative reviews, and what is a negative review. And like a lot of the times I want to like comment on this stuff and I'm like, I don't think these people are in the space to hear this. Like, yeah. I try not to like get into controversial stuff because it's like, it's not even worth the time, because a lot of people that are posting these like controversial things, like they don't want to debate it. They just want people to agree with them.
Yeah. 100%.
Well, what about some positive things you feel about the indie space at the moment?
I've noticed a lot more that people are starting to accept indie books a lot more. Like, it's been a very slow build, but I've seen like, it's starting to gain more traction. People aren't like just like, they're not just putting like indie books on their like, you know, five indie books to read. Like, they're just saying like five books to read, and they don't feel the need anymore. Like, they might mention it's indie in the comments, but they're not like categorizing it as just indie. It's like, you know, like diversity, when people are saying like the best like books to read with LGBTQ characters, it's like, why can't they just be the best books? So it's nice to see people like putting indie books in with traditionally published books and not feeling the need to like say that they're one or the other. And yeah, I've noticed it in like in-person stuff too. Like, when I tell people that I'm self-published, when I go to like events, they don't like, I still might have to like explain exactly what that is, but there's less of like a stigma and like judgment when I talk about it, which has been super nice. And they'll just they don't see it as like lesser. A lot of people do, but
I felt the change too. And like, I've noticed recently, like, I've had a few people read my book and put it on YouTube, and no one mentioned I was self-published. No one mentioned I was self-published. It's like they didn't even know. And I was so happy about it, because I have felt that shift as well. Like, it was always, oh, this is a good self-pub book. Like, it's like a good for being self-published rather than just a good book. It was always like a bit of a shade. But yeah, recently I have felt that shift. It's really exciting, I think. Yeah, really exciting. I wanted to talk about really quickly touring your book. So like going out to bookshops, and like, I've seen pictures of you at signings and stuff. And again, an incredibly cool thing to back yourself and to take yourself into these spaces. How do you organize them, and what do you do?
Yeah, so in-person events are actually where I make the most money.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah, I don't actually make a lot of sales on like Amazon and other, like I do make sales, but like you see some authors like, you know, talking about their KU page reads, and it's always been such like, that's kind of where I feel like shame, because I see all these like massive numbers on other indie authors' webs, like Instagrams and stuff, and I'm like, I don't get that.
Yeah.
And for like total transparency, I had one pre-order of Winter's Wrath, my most recently published book. A single person pre-ordered it.
Do you know who it was?
I don't.
Oh, I like that they're out there.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's somebody that like knows me, but like, I don't know exactly who it is. But the most I've ever had pre-ordered is 3. And for whatever reason, my readers just don't want to pre-order my books. I don't know what it is. The other funny thing is, I've never sold a single book when I've had my books on sale. Ever.
That is so interesting.
But I've had sales like the following week. It's like, but they, you could have, but I'm like, okay, I'm not going to complain to get more money for the book than less, but like, it's just really weird to like notice. So like, I've kind of decided like, I'm not really going to run sales anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Apparently don't want it. But yeah, I make most of my sales in in-person, like local type events. So
do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I do. It's a lot easier to sell a book to somebody when you can talk to them about it, like in person, and explain things better. But yeah, I basically just look for like local, like art festivals and things like that. So I have, in June, I'm going to a spring market at a local winery. My mom and my sister like found this like winery, because it's like halfway between our town and where my sister goes to school. So my mom will like go pick her up, and they'll go to the winery and have like, they have like paint days and like all kinds of fun stuff. And so that's like where I got the connection. And mom found out that they do these like semi-annual markets. So I went to their Christmas market in November, and now I've signed up to go to their spring market. It's like a vendor market. So you have like candle makers or people that knit hats, like all kinds of different things. And so I'll be selling my books there. And then in May, I guess that's June. So before that, in May, our city region has an arts council, and the arts council hosts this annual makers market. So I'm going to that. There's people, it's just all artists. So that covers like people that paint, draw, make stuff out of metal. Like it's very interesting. I'm the only author that I know of. Last time.
I feel like authors don't realize that you can take up space in this way. But again, like a fucking cool way to do it.
Yeah, I heard, I think it was maybe on the Tim Ferriss podcast. I think Tim Ferriss said that as everyone moves online, there's incredible room to move in person. Like it's just, in person has almost become the new, what online was. It's like, it's a point of difference now. It's a real connection that people are actually longing for.
And they get to meet the author.
And I'm usually the only author at these events. So like I'm the only person selling books. So it's something different as opposed to like, there might be a couple people selling like quilts. And so, but I'm like, people are always like, oh, there's books. And I'm like, yeah, isn't it great?
I love like, that. I think it's such a cool thing to do.
At things like this, they're like, are there any books here?
Yeah.
And I love that. Yeah, so, and a lot of the times like with arts festivals, like stuff that's like labeled arts festivals, I usually have to like ask, like, does books count? Like, are you counting? Because a lot of the times, like books are art, but a lot of people don't see it that way. Like the store that I work at right now is working on this, like having weekly little small business features at the store where people can set up a table, and they wanted to call it like some kind of like artists or whatever. And then I was like, okay, you can do that, but you got to understand the language that you're using, because a lot of people, even if they are artists, they don't consider themselves to be artists.
Yeah.
Especially the older they are as opposed to the younger they are. So like, and then the one girl's like, she's like, well, yeah, she's like, cause I want you to like have your books there the one weekend, but I wouldn't consider you an artist. And part of me was like, oh, that hurt.
It's like the opposite you get when people follow Amy and they go, I really like your page, even though I'm not a writer. It's like, I mean, it's sort of irrelevant. It's all art, you know?
Yeah, it is funny. I think, we need to be broadening this definition of what art is. Like, of course what we do is art. It's ridiculous. And I love you're taking up space in this way. Like, you're paving the way for other authors to do this. And I want other authors, I want myself to do this. I want authors who are listening to follow in Emma's footsteps. You're just actually fucking leading the way, and it's so cool.
Yeah. And then this year for Winter's Wrath's release, like, I really have always wanted to do like a book tour of some kind, like, you know, like real authors do, air quotes.
Yeah.
Because like, obviously I'm a real author, but you know, as a self-published author, you always see like traditional published author, like the way they do things is like, you see it as almost out of reach. Like I can't do that because I'm not them. And so I was like, hey, well, what if I just start small? Like, what if I do a local book tour and like, it'll still count. And so I knew that the local museum in like my hometown had done some book launches before. So I reached out to them. It's like, hey, can I do a book launch at the museum? So that's actually tomorrow, and I'm doing that because they said yes, like immediately. And then I was like, okay, where else can I go? And so I live in this, like, it's kind of a city. Like, it's a city now. They don't really call it a city because it's within a larger region that's called the city of Kortha Lakes, because it's made up of like a bunch of like little towns that kind of needed a bigger. But now my town is the biggest one, and it's basically its own city, but it can't be called that because it's in. But anyway, so there's like stuff that's like bigger cities that are kind of close to it. So the next closest like bigger city is like 40 minutes away, and they have a Chapters, which, if you're not Canadian, like Chapters is kind of like our Barnes and Noble, our Waterstones. Like, you've got Indigo, which is the big guy, and then Chapters is like the medium store, and then you have Kohl's, which you might find in like a mall. But so I've always, like, that Chapters is where I buy most of my books as like growing up, and like that's my bookstore kind of. So I've always wanted to like have my books at a signing at the Chapters. So I'm like, okay, I'll ask them. Like, I have no idea how this will go. And I had my books there on consignment for a couple years also. And they just, like, the week before I was going to ask about the book signing, they emailed me and said, we've just gone through our consignment books and we'd like you to come pick up your books. I was so sad, but like they like to rotate people through and you know, get new authors opportunities to be in the store. And I was like, well, darn, now I've like lost my in. But anyway, like in the email they sent, I emailed back and said like I just went for it. And I'm like, okay, I'll take my books for sure, but I have a new book coming out. I was wondering if I could do a signing. And like that was like the most stressful like email I ever sent in my life.
I'm so proud of you.
I also sent a similar email to this bookstore in another city the other way, asking like the same thing, like, can I do a book signing in your store? Because they do a lot of bookish events at this one. And both of those emails, I just sent them like your whole thing about being like delusional. Like that was me like thinking like, this is completely delusional, but I'll send the emails anyway so I can say that I tried. I didn't expect anything from it because I was just like, I don't know, I talked down to myself a lot and I was like, there's no way that this is gonna happen. And then they both emailed me back and said yes, and I like freaked out for like 3 days.
It's amazing.
So exciting. When is it?
So the one in my hometown is tomorrow, and then 2 weeks from that I'm in Chapters, and then 2 weeks from that I'm in the other one. And the
it's
last
so fucking
event
cool.
The last event of the tour is actually on the 1 month anniversary of the book release, so
nice.
It's kind of like wraps it all up nicely. But yeah, I was like, I can't believe this is actually happening.
And so good.
Like looking back at it, it's like, hey, it's not that, I'm like, it wasn't that scary, but it seemed like completely out of reach when I first thought about it. So
I'm really fucking proud of you for being delusional, and I like, look at what you're doing. It's so cool. Oh, I love it.
I have one final thing I want to say before we start wrapping up, which is, if you could give advice to any author who wanted to go down the traditional route or the India route, what piece of advice would you give to them?
I'm so people always ask this question.
Yeah.
Well, basically, like, you've got to start somewhere, and like you can't write from nothing. You just got to like start doing something, and it's going to take a while to get where you want to be, but if you don't start, you're never going to get there. And I think probably my biggest thing is like to not be afraid to get feedback, whether that's critique partners, beta readers, your best friend, your mom. Like, don't be afraid to share your art, but just be mindful of who you share it with, depending on what stage that you're at. Like, if your parents are usually like super critical, like they love you, but they're critical, maybe you shouldn't be showing it to them first, because you don't need that. You're not at the level where you can accept like heavy critique yet. But like, try to find people that you can share it with that can give you like gentle feedback, so that you can slowly build up your tolerance towards like criticism and constructive criticism, because you can't write in a void. You can for like, you can write by yourself for so long, but if you ever want to get something published, you have to let people read it, and you have to get feedback, because at a certain point you can't see what's wrong with it. Like, I can probably recite to you the first chapter of my book like by heart. You get to the point where you're just reading what you know it's supposed to say, as opposed to like what it is.
I love that. So that's beautiful. That's a beautiful piece of advice. I'm very grateful.
And then the last thing I was going to say was, I would love to give you the opportunity to pitch.
No pressure.
So imagine you're meeting someone at one of these stalls in person. Imagine that's our audience for our podcast. What would you say to them to convince them to buy one of your books?
Yeah. It's always the hardest part.
It's the worst part.
Like, I have this long synopsis and I could tell you about it for like 2 hours, but to like sell it to you. So I have 6 books out. I have a main trilogy that is a complete, and that is a young adult dystopian trilogy called The Guild Trilogy. Book one is Silent Night, and it's a story set in a future world where society has crumbled instead of going forward. So they don't have cell phones, they don't have running cars, like technology went so far forward that it broke and went backward.
Nice.
And so it's kind of like this broken down city that's like slowly dying, and it's being fought over by two groups. So you have the resistance, which is what's left of the original city's like army, and they're fighting against the Assassin's Guild, which is this group of assassins that came from mercenaries in a past war. And so the assassins want to take control of the city, rule it as like a dictatorship. And the resistance wants to reinstate democracy and start rebuilding the city so that they can go on. And the story follows a young female assassin who goes by the title Silent Knight as she's navigating this world. And it's her life's goal to become the master assassin at the guild. But then something goes wrong. She learns a horrible truth and ends up switching sides. And she spends the novel and really the whole series deciding if she's helping the resistance because she actually cares about what they're trying to achieve, or if she's helping them for her own personal gain. And it's a story of redemption, learning to love and trust again, and whether or not she will save the city or condemn it to darkness.
Mm, well done.
Yeah, so that's 3 book series, and you also have the short story collection that you don't need to read to finish the series, but is bonus content, and I highly recommend it.
I love that.
And yeah, the series, lots of action, lots of morally gray characters, anti-heroes, enemies to lovers romance, that's your sort of thing. And then I also have a fantasy trilogy, also YA. It reads a little bit younger. And it's, so Summer's Revenge is the first book, and I just published Winter's Wrath this week, 2 days ago. And it's a story set in a totally fictional realm where the kingdoms are divided into the seasons. So in summer, it's always summer, and in winter, the snow never melts. And we follow the crown prince of summer as he is seeking revenge for his parents' death when he was 4 years old. And basically, the king declares war against winter early on in the book because these two kingdoms have always been at odds ever since anyone can remember. The prince joins the war because he believes that winter has killed his parents. He wants to get his revenge. And along the way, he discovers a lot more problems, a lot more going on behind the scenes than he ever bargained for. And yeah, it's a great story if you love magic of any kind, sibling relationships, the chosen one, prophecies, gods that are controlling the fates of the world. And yeah, so it does have a little bit of romance in book 2 and beyond, but it more focuses on family and friend relationships.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And we'll put all the links obviously in the show notes, and you can go and you can look at the wonderful Goodreads reviews, which are glowing, I must say, of Emma's books.
Yeah,
as well.
I've gotten 9 this week, and I just I can't stop smiling about it. It's
yeah.
Great.
So I think go and see the quality of what what other people are saying about the book as well. You can see it's been very well received. I strongly encourage everyone to go and check out Emma's work.
Yeah, thank you so much, Emma. Thank you for leading the way for authors everywhere, and thank you for choosing yourself and picking yourself and taking yourself so seriously. We are so grateful for you and your work.
Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, guys. We will chat to you next week.